Greetings to you, my beautiful friends. It is I, D. Trussell, reporting in to you from COVID land. I'm at the end of my COVID quarantine. I got diagnosed with the disease. And I'm not going to, look, I don't want to go on and on with the experience of having COVID or ear beat you too much with like all the COVID talk that you've all been fucking getting. I'll just say this. I'm fine now. It got a little weird for a couple of days, but thank God that I got this fucking vaccine. Thank God that I got to microdose COVID, because I would not want a full dose of this shit. It is weird. Not enough people are talking about how alien it feels. They're talking about all of these like physiological symptoms, the coughing, the shortness of breath, the losing your taste or smell, which thank God didn't happen to me, as I am a professional chef. And next week I'm headed to Paris for a pretty big fucking cooking contest. But you know, the thing that doesn't seem to be getting covered is it's like, you've got an alien in you. This is a brand new thing. Whether it came from a vat or a bat or outer space, this is like apparently the first time this little fella's been rampaging around inside the human biome, and it feels psychologically just weird. Also, I think the tactic that a lot of people are using right now to try to shame people or like attack people's intelligence because they're not getting the vaccine is super lame and not effective at all. And y'all have been doing it, need to stop. And I've been slightly guilty of it myself. It's the go-to, right? Because we all assume that other people are running the same operating system that we are. We forget the basic reality of just how fucking weird human beings are, in the sense that they can look like us. You know, we've got bipedal hominids without wings. I like saying that. I read it once as a description for humans. Bipedal wingless hominids. We've got, well, they all kind of look the same. Different, like mild differences in size and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But inside the weird universes and galaxies that exist inside of the individual human being can be so vastly different. This is why we get serial killers. This is why we get to enjoy like documentaries on the Zodiac Killer. My point is this: right now, I guarantee that within a 50-mile radius of you, there is someone in their closet in front of a shrine to Bigfoot or Justin Bieber, offering it bowls of their cum that they've collected over the last many days. And they think that's normal. They also don't want to get the vaccine. And so the idea that you're going to get someone who offers cum tributes to cryptids or celebrities to get vaccinated by insulting their intelligence is a little naive on your part. It's just not going to work. You've got somebody right now filling up silver bowls of cum and offering it to mythological woodland forest creatures. And you think that your like savage tweet calling them idiots or murderers is going to move the vaccine needle? I'm sorry. I just don't think it's going to work. That being said, I'm so glad that I got the shot. I'm so glad I got the shot. I'm so glad that I'm at the end of this thing and I haven't been in a hospital and that I didn't get like the horrible symptoms that go along with this motherfucker. So the mercy of Bigfoot was upon me. I made it through it with relatively unscathed, though I still feel a little weird, a little fatigued, a little bit of a brain fog, but that could be related to the fact that I've been doing LSD on and off for the better part of my adult life. We have a fantastic episode for you today. Comedian Rosebud Baker is here with us. We're going to jump right into it, but first, this. This episode of the DTFH has been brought to you by the geniuses over at Squarespace.com. You want to make a beautiful website? There's a few ways you could do it. You can get down on your knees and you can pray to fucking God that you get lucky enough to find a web designer that hasn't gone completely insane from blasting their perineum with sunlight. Now, look, I'm not saying doing that isn't good for you, but some web designers, you can look it up. It's a whole phenomena. They overdo it. They bake their taints and the madness spreads into their brains and they no longer are capable of helping you create the website of your dreams. So you could do that. You can pray and hope and roll the dice, or you go to Squarespace and you give them a try. And here's a little nugget of glory for you. BigfootCumTribute.com is available, and you can buy that domain by going to Squarespace. Not only can you buy domains, you can build a website in seconds using their mix and match templates, or if you want to go deep and make a complex, beautiful thing of true glory, like what you'll find over at DuncanTrussell.com, you can do that too. And you can use the Squarespace technology to send out mass emails to your client base. And they have amazing stats. So if you want to do SEO or understand like who's checking out your website, they've got everything you need. All you got to do is head over to squarespace.com/Duncan and try it out for free. If you like it, use offer code Duncan and you'll get 10% off your first order of a website or a domain. Give them a shot. Thank you, Squarespace. Look, I don't have my editor, okay? So this is me doing it the way I used to do it. My wonderful genius editor has gone on a spiritual journey, I think. I'm not sure. I think everything he does is spiritual because he's practically enlightened. The point is, I'm doing this myself now, so you're not going to get the pristine, sweet, perfect, beautiful, glorious sound that you get from an Aaron Goldberg edited podcast. This is me doing it the old way. I want to invite you to check out my Patreon. It's at patreon.com/DTFH. My apologies to the DTFH family who I ghosted this last Friday. If any of y'all are listening, I'm so sorry I didn't make it to the family gathering. I completely forgot, but I think I have a pretty good excuse. I've got the plague, but we'll be back. Don't worry, things will get back to normal. Every week we get together and I love it. We've got a weekly meditation group, Journey into Boredom, and every Friday we have a family gathering, and it's a really awesome group of some of the most brilliant, beautiful, powerful, erotic, occult-laden sorcerers, sorceresses, wizards, necromancers, and a variety of other weird, mystical, wizard things, including all forms of pagan and like alien-worshipping folks, and I think probably definitely some aliens and some djinn at this point are hanging out at the DTFH Discord server, which you'll get access to when you go to patreon.com/DTFH. Today we have a powerful comedian. She is so funny. I got to hang out with her a little bit in New York at some shows. We had some great conversations. She's brilliant, and thank God she just released a wonderful comedy special called Whiskey Fists, which you can watch for free on YouTube right now. And I really hope you will, because it's super funny and you'll see just how much love Rosebud poured into it. Now, everybody, please welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, Rosebud Baker. Rosebud, right. God bless you. Thank you so much for being on this episode of the DTFH, a very special episode. I've got COVID, so how wonderful to be talking to a human being.
Topical.
I try to stay, I want to stay relevant. So I went and made out with a bunch of cowboys here in Austin, Texas, the epicenter of disease right now. Rosebud, I got to say, your special is so good, and congratulations. You must be feeling great to have put all that.
Thanks,
how long did it take you to develop that set?
I mean, that's like, I would say I've been doing comedy now for 9 years, maybe 10 years. It's like you have to add 2 years on. So it was 10 years.
What do you mean you got to add 2 years on?
Well, because I was like, how many years was I doing comedy when the pandemic hit? You know what I mean? So, because the whole year that the pandemic was going on, I felt like, I mean, I was still doing comedy. I was still doing the road and stuff, but I wasn't as loose or as confident as I had been. and everything felt so raw. And I just thought, this is kind of a perfect time to do a special because I'm so raw. Like, there's so much going on, and there's so much tension. And that can be, obviously, like, people think that it's not good for comedy. There's some people do, but I think it's great. I think it's such a great thing to be in the middle of. And so I decided I would do it in the middle of everything. I did it in March of 2021.
Holy shit.
That was when we recorded it. Yeah.
Wow. That is crazy. Yeah. That's crazy. That's the kind of thing where everything it was telling you not to do it. I mean, there must have been people telling you, are you sure you want to do this right now?
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody was like, just maybe like hold off or maybe. And I just was like, I'm going to do it myself. So, you know, I'm just going to do it. And also, because here's the thing. We get on stage and we talk about how we feel at the moment and when it in the moment. And comedy is like a living, breathing thing. So once you have changed as a person, the things that you were saying before no longer feel they don't ring true the same way. Like they don't feel as funny, or they just don't feel as ripe is really how it is.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't want to take 10 years of work and throw it in the garbage. And then I would like to put it out and have people see it. And so I was like, I'm going to do it whether it goes on my YouTube or whatever. And then Comedy Central, actually All Things Comedy got behind it. And then Comedy Central got behind it. And now it's streaming on their YouTube. So it all kind of worked out. But yeah, you're right. I was like, all signs were pointing to, please don't do this.
So glad you did it. Have you ever got, like, when you, that, I love that you're pointing out that aspect of comedy, which is, it's the strangest art form. There's so many, it's like, you know, when you're a painter painting on a canvas, it's like, you don't have to worry about the canvas's opinions changing or social events altering while working on something. Like, it's not going to suddenly like not like a certain color that you're painting or feel like the strokes you're using are weird or anyway, I'm so glad you're acknowledging that. And I have you ever gone into robot mode? You know what I mean? Which I have, where rather than admitting I've changed, the world is different now, something's changed in me, I just keep doing the same fucking bit because it works. Have you ever gotten stuck like that, like a skipping record?
You know, I've definitely had sets like that where it's, you get on stage and you're like, but here's the thing, I always know that I'm in that mode. I can't ever like be in that mode and just like be cool with it. I'm always miserable. It's always like, if it feels like it isn't true, or if it feels like it's not hitting the same way, or that it's not as ripe anymore, I feel so bad. Even if the set went well, the laughs make me like sick. I get like ill from listening to them, you know?
It's the darkest.
And it was happening
feeling.
A lot. Yeah, it was happening a lot during the pandemic. It was like I would walk into a comedy club, even when things were opening up again, and I felt like, you know, what is going on? Like, I would be in the middle of a set and ask the audience, what am I doing here? And it was like...
Yeah, yeah.
Like, people in the Midwest who, like, weren't really that worried about COVID, and I was coming from New York City where there's like boxes of bodies on the street, and I'd be like, what are we doing? And they're looking at me like, ladies, you're bumming us out.
Yeah. How about that? Know? When we leave LA, we moved the whole family up to North Carolina, where, you know, they were aware of the pandemic, but the same situation where, you know, they just hadn't tasted the insanity that people living in big cities had gone through. And I remember just being like, realizing, like, fuck, if this is some low level form of PTSD, these people think I'm crazy because I'm like stuttering to them. Like, you don't understand, you know, everything was on fire and we left, the sun turned red. It would look like blood. Well, the sun looked like blood.
Yeah.
And they're just like, oh, what are you talking about? Like, yeah. So,
I know.
So strange. I mean, and are you back in New York right now?
I'm back now. Yeah. I moved. Well, I was in LA in the beginning of the pandemic though.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah, I ran into you at the Comedy Store sometime right around the end of the world. I remember that now.
Yeah. Yeah.
How's New York now? Are people starting to freak out about Delta?
I think that New York, once things opened up in New York, the CDC was like, hey, guys, we're not done battling COVID. And New York was like, maybe you're not. Like, we're done. Like, New York, okay. I mean, we're still walking around with masks on and stuff because New Yorkers just, they're just like, just let me go to work. You know what I mean?
Right.
Just let me keep going to work. And so we'll do what we got to do to battle COVID or whatever we have to do. But for the most part right now, things are very open and people are vaccinated and people are just living their lives. It's kind of great. At the moment.
Yeah.
Knock on wood.
I keep hearing that. I mean, here in Austin, it's very loose. People aren't worried about it. And I was here for only a few days and got fucking COVID, you know?
Yeah. But
I'm vaccinated, so it wasn't so terrible. When we were talking, and I'm sorry if this is something you don't want to say publicly, I'll delete it. No, you had COVID?
Well, I had COVID after I shot the special. It was so weird because I got my second shot. I had my first shot or was it like right after that that I had my, I had my first shot at the end of March and then I had my second shot in April and I got my second shot and then, I think I had to get a COVID test for a shoot that I was doing and it came back positive and, I was like confused because I got a positive test and then I got a negative test right afterwards. But let me tell you something. The side effects that I had from the second shot were like really bad. Like I was like, this is just side effects and they're not COVID and it's not COVID, I feel fucked up. And I also couldn't smell anything for like a solid 2 months. Just couldn't smell anything.
Wow.
So I'm like, some people said that I had a false positive, but I'm like, I don't think I did. I think it was real, you know, because I could not smell anything. Yeah. Yeah.
It's such a weird disease. It's got this like psychedelic quality to it. It's like, I don't know what it's doing. It's okay. I'm not alone in that. Thank God. Because I've done drugs my whole life. So I'm like, well, I don't know. I could just be burnout. But you've experienced that. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. There's a weird thing that happened. Like, I remember when I was in the hotel room with my husband, who didn't get it, by the way, who didn't get COVID from me. And
great.
I was like, it was right when it was the night after I'd gotten the shot and I started to feel this weird like thing in my forehead, like it was like a sinus infection. And then I started to look at my face and my face looked like if you drew a face on a volleyball, you know, like there was just there was less definition in my face. And and then I started to say things that you would say in the middle of a bad trip or something, you know, like I was like, what? Yeah. I was asking my husband, why can't you make me feel better? Like a baby. You know what I mean? It's like baby voice that comes from your childhood and just like comes out and is like, someone please help me. You know what I mean? Like that kind of like, and that's how it felt. It was a very weird, there's kind of a psychedelic quality, I think, to every sickness. Every time you get a fever, you get this sort of weird, it's like a return to your childhood. And that's sort of how I felt every time I did psychedelics. You know, I was like, oh, I'm taking a trip back in time here emotionally.
Whoa. Do you have a favorite psychedelic?
You know, I don't really like them. I mean, if I had to pick a favorite, yeah, I guess it would be mushrooms, but I don't really like psychedelics that much. I'm not like, I love control. I mean, it's really like, I like to feel in control, and it's not just like, it's interesting because it's not like you're out of control with psychedelics, or it's not like you're less out of control on psychedelics than you are in general in your life. But the thing that freaks me out the most with any like mushrooms or acid or anything, it's like, it's losing my mind and having people witness it. It's people seeing me. Is really, if you get really down into it, it's people seeing me and seeing how frightened or scared I really am, you know?
Oh, okay. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And so
that's great.
It's yeah. I mean, I've thought about this a lot, like, cause
go ahead. Sorry.
No, I've been sober for a long time now, and a lot of times I think about doing ayahuasca, you know, as a really for spiritual purposes and to kind of dig deep and kind of find what's left to unearth. And because you unearth a lot when you're sober, you walk around. It's like there's nothing to sort of quell the emotions. So
right.
There's a lot you learn about yourself. It's kind of a meditative way of life in the sense that you go through things. And yeah, so I've thought about it, but it's so scary to me. It's really scary.
I some of my sober friends will mention the ayahuasca idea. And like, I mean, I love drugs and I always feel like a complete like jerk or hypocrite. And I'm like, don't do that. Like, because my friends who are like hardcore addicts, they almost died. Like in the anytime that they start using or relapse, they almost always die again. And so whenever I hear them say that, as much as I love psychedelics, I always think, wow, but what if?
Yeah.
What if? Like, how do you know? You don't know what's going to happen. Like, these fucking shamans, there's no certification for shamans out there. You don't know who you're going to end up with. And the brew itself, apparently ayahuasca just means brew. It could be any number of ingredients inside of the thing that you're taking. That being said, you could probably find someone who is like, good and all of that, but my God, I've heard it's people have to do it more than once, so then suddenly you're having to do it multiple times, and then the next thing you know,
that's the thing.
Because I know, like, as someone who is very addictive and has been addicted to many things, one of the massive respect for sober people, because when things start getting weird, when I'm sober and shit gets weird, I'll just be like, oh, I'll just get fucking stoned. Like, if I start feeling the thing, whatever, existential dread, the fear of death, a general sense of wooziness when it comes to my relationship with reality, it's like my meditation teacher invites me to sit with that. And, you know, what is that? Explore that. Get into that. What's going on there? What is that?
Right. But, and you're like, how do I RSVP no to that invitation?
Exactly.
Right.
But maybe psychedelics don't have to be something you eat. I mean, you know, because like that's the other thing. Whenever I hear about these 12 steps and these meetings and these rooms, it sounds like witchcraft. It's these like cabals of people doing some kind of communal, secretive healing ritual. You know, it's real. So maybe, you know, it's that's pretty intense just by itself, you know.
Well, yeah, there is like something about it that is, there's like a connection where I feel like so I was at a club a couple weekends ago and I ordered a Diet Coke and they brought me a Diet Coke, but it was filled with Jack Daniels, right? They didn't know I was sober. So I took this giant swig of it. It's happened a couple times to me in my career. And it kind of rocked me. Like, I was like, oh shit, you know, like right before I go on stage. And I just texted a friend who's also sober and was like, oh, fuck, I just did this thing and I'm about to go on stage, but I just, like, I had to tell somebody. It was this weird thing where I was like, I'm going to tell somebody and then I'll feel better. And it's just somebody who suffers from the same thing, who
right.
has been sober the same amount of time as me, who's also a comedian, and was like, it's happened to me 4 or 5 times in my career. Get on stage, talk about it. It's going to be fine. Call me tomorrow. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't yeah. upset anymore. It was just this.
Yeah.
It's the needing to be understood, needing to know you're not alone, all of that that yeah. you would seek from drugs or alcohol, you just get it from people. And it's harder to do. I'll say that. It's harder to say to somebody, hey, I'm scared, or like, hey, I did this thing and I'm ashamed of it, or it was an yeah. accident, but I still feel guilty, and, you know, all of that. But it's useful, you know?
Yeah. I mean, look what you, I love psychedelics. They're the best. I love taking drugs. I'll do them for the rest of my life. And I've heard really great things about psychedelic therapy. You know, and it's, you know, mm-hmm. the data on it is really good. I have a friend who's a psychiatrist, and we talk about it sometimes, using psilocybin to treat addiction and stuff like that. It could really work. So I don't mean to say don't right. do the ayahuasca. I just feel like I'm going to get a million fucking shitty tweets from people being like, it healed me, it cured me or anything. So I'm not, I'm old now and I'm careful with stuff like this, but right. It's interesting to me that you are that you have chosen a profession that invites you to bear your soul to strangers, to show your true self to people, because if you don't, they know, and then they don't like you. But also, right. you don't want people to witness this fear that you're talking about, this, you know, this inner self that you feel like you're hiding from people. It's just curious to me that it's like you've literally picked, like, there's so many other yeah. jobs where you don't, but yeah. is that maybe that's part of what makes you funny. I don't know. Is that how different is the rosebud on stage from the rosebud off stage?
Well, it's so like, it's, I really don't feel all that different from who I am on stage, but there is one part of myself that I 100% leave out of my comedy, I think, and, or have been, and it's yeah. something that I've been dealing with over the pandemic, where I think before, and I think in this hour, my tendency was to, I was so sure of myself, you know? And I was so sure about the things that I was talking about. And I also, just to be fair, being on stage is a very controlled experience. I mean, I have sure. literally spent years, like, making sure that the wording of these jokes is exactly what I want it to be, that I could defend every joke that I've written. And that
wow.
I could even, like, expand on it, you know? So all of that is very controlled. I have a microphone. The crowd can't talk back. I mean, they can, but it's like I have the mic. So
yeah.
there's already there's a power dynamic there where I'm in
Fair
control
enough.
And they're
sure.
along for the ride. But, you know, I don't talk about, like, my sensitivity. I don't talk about, like, moments where I felt vulnerable, and I'm trying to, I mean, I talk about my sister's death and all of that, but I don't, like, I don't know. There's like a side of me that's very sensitive, and I feel like it doesn't come off on stage because my sense of humor is not sensitive. My sense of humor lacks sensitivity, I think.
Right.
And you know, I watch my husband on stage, and he talks about how, like, he has this great joke about his mom he's like, you know, when I was born, my mom had such bad postpartum depression that she couldn't hold me without crying.
Oh,
and he says,
fuck.
And my question about that is, why do I know that? And it's just
that's
like,
a great joke.
It's such a good joke, and it's so like it's so yeah. you just know everything about him in that one joke. Like you it says everything about who he is. Like yeah. deep inside. And I want to be able to channel the parts of me that feel vulnerable like that and to make them funny. I had worked through all of the complicated feelings about that before I ever started talking about it on stage. And I think that I left out jokes that I could have expanded on it even more. You know what I mean? I could have expanded on what's hard about it. Mm. You know, like when after the last year, you know, it was like the pandemic happened, and then I my husband and I were trying to get pregnant, and I had a miscarriage. I had two miscarriages back to back. And it was like,
sorry.
Now I'm like, thank you. But I'm trying to talk about that on stage, and the way that things are coming out, it's very like, it's still fresh in the sense that I'm still working through a lot of the feelings privately. But then when I get on stage, I'm also talking about these experiences, like the advice that people give you when you go through a miscarriage is so misguided, and how like the way that my response to some of that advice is, I think, pretty funny. Like, so I'm trying to talk about that, you know, like I had a friend call me up and unprompted was just like, there's nothing wrong with you. And I thought, that's so nice. If I had said that, I think something's wrong with me, you know what I mean? Like, but I compare it to like walking up to a single woman at a wedding and being like, you're not ugly. You know, like, it's just like, so I'm trying to kind of get into that. And it's really a fun, this is the beauty of comedy and of any sort of art form, right? Is yeah. like you keep digging, you keep finding where you're afraid to go, and you just keep going there, because
yes.
that's the only way that I know how to do this.
Right.
You know, therapy's great. I've been in therapy for 8-9 years now, and it's all like body therapy where you just like you punch pillows and yell at your dad and get
cool,
you know, get things out of your body.
Yeah.
But doing it on stage in front of people, having people witness the humor in what you're going through is more empowering to me than anything else.
Fuck know. Yeah. And God bless you for going after those motherfuckers because they need to stop. They need to stop. You know, it's like a whole legion of demonic, compassionate yeah. people. That's what's so fucked up is they're legit. I know a friend of mine lost her, I don't, I'm going to change the, a friend of mine lost someone very close to, why am I just, I know we've had these conversations like, off mic. So I remember having a conversation with a friend of mine who had a catastrophic loss in their life, unexpected, mm-hmm. horrific, mm-hmm. horrific. And
yeah,
listening to her talk about just what you're saying, just these well-intentioned people coming up to you, trying to comfort you when right. you're just essentially like, you're like a fucking crater. You know what I mean? Like your yeah. whole unit, there's a vacuum that used to be someone that you were married to walking around in your life. And you have people coming up, giving you these like weird flippant Dr. Phil fucking things. And like yeah. but she was saying, you know, what I've learned to do is just recognize what's behind it is love. You know, it's like, yeah. It's like a fucked up kid bringing you like a bowl of diarrhea mixed with crayons and being like, I made yeah. this for you.
Right. I mean?
but the thing behind it is they love you, yeah. you know. Fuck it. I'm so glad you're attacking that, because it has to. I don't know. What do you think is the right way for people to react to someone who has gone through something like losing someone they love, a miscarriage or a great loss? How are we to react in a way that is respectful?
You know, I think it really depends on the person. I would love for there to be a rule, you know, but I don't think there is. And people have all kinds of different beliefs around death and feelings around loss. And so there's really no right way to do it. I just think that, like, for me, some people would look at the way that I react to loss. Like, when somebody says that they lost someone, I never say I'm sorry, because I feel like that's asking for them to comfort me. You know what I mean?
Oh, so shit. I do that. I gotta sort of stop. I just did it to you.
No, but it's one of those things. It's like a natural reaction. It's the way that we have been conditioned to respond to that.
Right.
And so I always just say, oh God, you know what I mean? And then I just kind of witness where they're at with it, you know? Because you can tell, like, if somebody really wants to talk about it, they'll, you know, talk about it. But if they're in the middle of, like, a story and they have to mention that somebody's dead and then they're trying to get to the point and they don't really want to get, like, caught in the feelings that go along, it's, you know, you can tell they're trying to get to the other side of the story. And so I just go, oh, yeah. Or I just witness it. You know what I mean? That's really what I felt like. One thing that I noticed with miscarriage specifically is that no one talks about it and no one knows what to say. And they tell you as a woman, like, you can start trying again as soon as you want to. And they never, like, they never go, if you're ready or if you want, or like, and it's so crazy that we're supposed to just go through that and then go to work. Like, you just, because being pregnant changes you biologically on so many levels, and changes who you are. I mean, so I feel like part of what I'm doing on stage right now is trying to incorporate who I've become through that experience, which is, like, to be honest, a much gentler person than I was before I ever got pregnant and before I ever experienced a miscarriage. It was like, I mean, that's like you want to talk about a psychedelic experience. That shit is fucking crazy. Like, having had the experience of just being pregnant for as long as I was is like, I mean, it's like opening the fucking doors to a whole other, you're like, I'm a shape-shifting superhuman. It's awesome. And I don't feel necessarily, like, bad for myself that I didn't have a kid. That's the thing that I came out of this with, is like, I was feeling awful and I was crying and I was like, why would this happen to me? And I realized that a lot of my grief was tied up in, women are supposed to have babies, and if I can't have a baby, I'm not useful. And that's not, and then I was like, oh, maybe I'm crying because I still on some level believe this bullshit, you know?
Wow.
And so, you know, at the end of the day, I truly don't see this loss as something that I see it as a step in my own evolution more than the loss of something or someone, even though it's also that. So it's very, I feel like I just babbled on for a long time, but.
It's so nice to hear you. It's one of those things, there's nothing we can say. I, you know, I have kids, and when I've watched my wife go through it, there's nothing. What can you say? What can you do? Yeah. You really do become like this kind of, I become just a bumbling, stuttering dope. I mean, there's not much you're watching. So, you know, whether, no matter what, I can't think of anything to say in the face of it. We need something better than what we've got in our language for this shit. We're just in that. And I'll tell you, that thing where they're like, okay, back to work, that thing, to me, that is one of the most shocking qualities of human society where it's at right now. It's like somehow there's no place for that. You're just like, oh, okay, you know, dust yourself off. And then, you know, just go back into the fucking mosh pit of society. Like, it's nuts. And we need something. Like, God damn it, we need something. Like, orb, like a little glass orb that you keep in a special pouch in your pocket where someone tells you something like that and you break it in front of them. You don't say anything. You just break the glass.
Right.
Maybe it makes your hand bleed a little bit. Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of why I talk about the stuff that I talk about on stage, is because I'm just like, why can't this be part of our conversation? Like, why can't we talk about tragic shit with the same ease that we talk about everything else? Like, it's there and it's a part of our life the same way that everything else is. And if you have to go to back to work on Monday, you should at least be able to say, oh yeah, I just had a miscarriage this weekend, fucking
yes,
crazy. You know what I mean? You should be able to say that.
If you got attacked by a dog, you would say it. If you saw your friend get like sideswiped by a moped, you'd say it. If like if your dog got carried off by a hawk, you'd fucking say it. But for some reason, women who have gone through that are invited by some, I don't know what, some societal whatever the fuck, to not talk about it, to the point where when you get the positive on the pregnancy test, you are instructed by one person inevitably, you know what, don't share the news for this many months.
Yes.
Because, you know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That is so weird. It doesn't make any sense at all. What the fuck is that all about? Right. It's superstitious. It's creepy. Ugh.
I know.
Yeah, I'm glad you're talking about it.
It's fucking crazy. And I never paid attention to any of that. Like, I was somebody that, like, the second that I got pregnant, I was telling everybody. I was like, oh, yeah, I'm pregnant.
Yes.
And then everybody was like, oh, you shouldn't tell people. You shouldn't tell people. And I'm like, I'm so fucking glad I told people. Because otherwise, I'd just be walking around like a fucking Trader Joe's employee on 9/11, just smiling through the craziest shit. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you have to, I mean, you have to honor your own experience. That's pretty much all I'm trying to say, is like, you have to be honest about what you're going through, and you're not, because the thing is, you're not unique. Like, you're not that special. Like, everyone's going through it. So fucking, like, be honest and let people know they're not alone. And it's, and because it's a fucking crazy life.
Do you think this is another part of this epidemic, right? You hear about these statistics. You read the statistics about how many people have lost someone at this point. It is fucking insane. I don't see the I don't see people expressing what I would imagine people would be expressing, you know, with the amount of insanity that's happening in the world right now. You know, there's a job I heard about. It's a professional mourner. Have you heard of this in the Middle East? You ever heard of these people? You pay them to come to funerals and stuff. They scream and they pull their hair and shit like that. Like, but it's basically like you.
Jesus, so it's I like want that when job.
You're. What's that?
I said I want that job.
Me too. Me too. But it's almost like an acknowledgement of like, look, this is you. You know, I get it. You can't do it right now, but here's someone who'll like make the sounds that you're feeling inside. But fuck, come on. I do get the feeling that people are just kind of like pretending at this point nothing's happening. And that is really making things a million times worse than they already are.
Yeah.
You know, it would be nice if people were just like acknowledging that this is completely fucking crazy. Like, this is this is going on and on and on, and we're all confused, and like, everyone's like weirded out. I know I'm the one who's babbling. I've got brain fog. I can blame it on that. You should see what I'm seeing right now. There's like gnomes dancing on the TV right now. No, but you know what I'm saying? Like we,
I completely agree.
I'm in fucking quarantine right now. This isn't normal. I'm like sitting in a hotel room day fucking 8 or 9 of a quarantine. It's you people do need to be open about this bullshit, because otherwise we're just all going to turn into robots.
Yeah. And it's already happening. I mean, like the way that people, I mean, we're like, I was talking to somebody, I think it was Drew Michael. He shared about going to his grandmother's funeral on Zoom. Right. And what it was to experience a funeral on Zoom, like grief, which is like just the rawest, realest emotion out there, through the prism of your computer screen, and like how disconnected you can be from someone who you knew as they, like, it's just this crazy experience. And I don't know. I think there's like, we have somewhat, we've removed ourselves from our humanity while trying to honor one another's humanity. It's this weird fucking thing. It's there's this cognitive dissonance that's happening, because, you know, I go online and I see on Twitter just like people who are not real. Like it's not real, because on Twitter, but the emotions that it like stirs up in me, especially when they start to like go after like a friend of mine, right? I get so furious, because I'm like, you are talking about a whole person as if you understand them completely and as if you've ever met them even once. So it's just this crazy shit where I'm like, you guys are fighting for people you don't know against someone you don't know. And it's all for the good of humanity, but what, you're not helping humanity. Like you're a disease. Like you are, you know, the same way that people who think that everything is, that all of this is fake. Like, it's so funny to me that people in QAnon, which is a literal cult, are constantly talking about the importance of forming your own opinion. Like, I'm like, you're in a cult. What?
Yeah.
It's just this craziness.
Well, or someone's like retweeting a meme that says, be an individual. You know, it's like, they're like not even, a lot of the time they're not even saying anything. They're just regurgitating memes talking about individuality. I know.
Yeah, I'm like,
I know what you mean.
Put my head through a fucking wall. I swear to God. I like, it makes me furious. I get so mad.
Oh, you know, yeah, it is. It's getting, it's like, yeah, I think the only answer, and I can't do it. I was like looking at Twitter today and getting upset, you know, at everything on there and very different things. Yeah. And then just thinking like, what? I need to like get off of this shit. Like, of all the drugs I've ever been hooked on, this one's the most destructive. This is the one that's causing me the most anxiety. This is the one that's distorting reality, like in horrible ways. Maybe that's what we're dealing with.
Ruining my creativity too. Just like, it takes your creativity and just fucking flattens it. And I have no ideas all day because I'm just looking at people's opinions of me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, what?
Yeah.
And how self-centered is my... But with the special coming out and everything, it's like, I'll just read through people's opinions. And it's not the ones that are good that even make a dent. You know what I mean? No. It's everything that I even tried to... At the end of my special, I put this guy... who just cracked me up. He was just so funny to me because they asked, I was like, get the crowd's reactions, you know? And they went out and this guy was like, you know, she's just trying too hard to be edgy. You know, she doesn't, she's trying too hard to be edgy, which it's so funny to me because that alone is like, that is just, people are like, comedians never push, like they never push the envelope anymore. They're all just, and then you do it and you're, they're like, oh, it's too much. You know, that's a bit much.
That but fucking also, guy.
Yeah. But also then that guy is like, it's, he doesn't know that what he's saying is gendered, but if I was a man, he wouldn't have the same reaction. And like, I never really am one to go to, this is happening because I'm a woman. I think it's very easy to go to that. And if you do jump to that conclusion, you kind of miss out on a lot of opportunities to better yourself as a human being. But
yeah,
in this case, I watched that and I was like, that's so funny. He has no idea. He doesn't know that he is feeling that way because he doesn't want to hear a woman tell these jokes, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, look, we all know, like, if for women, like, the number one easiest job you can do is stand-up comedy, for sure. It's just...
Oh, yeah, no, just the easiest, yeah.
Everyone loves loves women comics. They don't have a hard time at all. I mean, at all. Trust me, I've been through the fucking ringer. I'm a dude. I got a fucking beard. Do you know how hard it is to get on stage with a beard, Rosebud? It's really fucking hard. Yeah. It's hard.
You know what? Can I tell you something? Right now, I wouldn't disagree with you. But I do think that...
Oh, yeah, you're right.
It's like... It's not... I wouldn't disagree right now. I mean, there's... It's so funny, like, the fucking victim Olympics that happen. But I think that...
Sure.
At the end of the day, Look, it's not an easy job being a stand-up in general. As a woman, it's very tough, but the things that are tough about it are so much bigger than, like, you know, some club owner not booking as many women. It's the fact that, like, you literally have to sacrifice having a family because there's no protections or maternity leave or fertility extension, financial aid. There's none of that. That is the stuff that's really hard, and that's, like, I have to call the president to, like, fix that. You know what I mean? That's, like, not... fixable in this decade. So
no,
you know, I look at it, but criticisms like that are so funny to me because they are not only are they gendered, but they're also my own criticisms of myself. Like when he said that shit, a part of me was like, he's right. You know what I mean? And he didn't even have to say it for me to think it. Like, it was already there, or else it wouldn't have made a dent. And I just thought, well, why don't I just put it in? Why don't I just roll credits over this dude? You know what I mean?
So funny. Also, you wouldn't have put it in if you didn't know that you had an incredible comedy special. I mean, maybe you would, but come on. You knew it was good. This was after you'd edited it, right? Like, this is when it...
Yeah.
Okay. So that's why you put... I mean, look, you put that in there. I mean, because that you have a killer special on your hands. So it's like you did the worst thing you could do to that guy. Like, that was really quite cruel if you think about what you did to him. It's like you edited this wonderful special and then you put this asshole at the end. People are gonna everyone's making fun of him now. I'm sure he's being attacked online. He's probably just so depressed. Like, he was drunk. He's like, what the fuck did I do that for? Oh, but good for you. I mean, because also that, you know what I hate? I hate, and I think I'm allowed to hate it because I've been guilty of it many times. I hate edgelording comedy. I fucking hate it. It's lazy and annoying, and it's not what you're doing. That is not what you're doing. And so his criticism was just completely fucked
off base,
up on every on every level.
Right.
But yeah, by the way, I think you got to go. 3:36. You got a little more time. What's your schedule looking like, Rose?
I got some more time. Listen, I'm doing nothing. I've got, like, I'm gonna walk my dog and go to the cellar, and that's it.
Okay, beautiful. Yeah. Thank you. So, Zoom roll. What do you think? Zoom, but for funerals. It's like huh? Like, huh? What do you think? We could do it.
I love it's it. Like, Zoomeral. Oh, Zoomeral. That's great.
I think his problem was Zoom. The interface doesn't, I don't even think you can choose like a nice, respectful black Zoom.
You can't.
So seeing the blue of Zoom and then like, you know, it probably could clash with a casket. That's me. I mean, now listen, I'm the fucking embarrassing edgelord. I'm sorry.
No, I think it's perfect. We put some flowers in the corners. You know what I mean? You get a filter on your screen with whatever you would be bringing to the funeral or, you know, like whatever your religious iconography is. You could put that in your shit. I think that's great. No, yeah, that's
love it.
Let me tell you something. They would sell that as if it was the most compassionate thing that had ever been created.
Oh,
that
yeah.
They would sell that like they were doing a favor for humanity.
Yes, they would. I think you probably popped someone's balloon. I imagine someone had already poured tons of R&D money into this thing already. It's like, look, people are dying. It's a plague. We gotta make a respectful funeral Zoom. Rosebud,
Did you do comedy over Zoom, by the way, during the pandemic?
Hell no.
I'm sorry to cut off your question.
Did you do that?
I didn't, but there was a lot. Well, actually, no, I did one bachelor party for like $2,000. I roasted a bunch of bachelors on Zoom, which was like pretty great. But easiest money I've ever fucking made. There was a company that basically was created for comics to do shows, like corporate shows over Zoom. And I recently got an email from them saying that they have developed an AI robot to tell jokes. And they were like, we're thinking about developing a show around this where the comics respond to our AI robots. And I was like, oh my God, you guys were just studying us. Like, that's what.
Holy fuck. That is so scary. That's so scary.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. I want to write back and be like, are you out of your fucking minds? Like,
yeah. No.
What is wrong with you guys?
Comedians, we're so, listen, every comedian I know is so like weirdly has just been like, our job will be around no matter what. And then the fucking pandemic hits and it's like, fuck, no, it won't. Guess what? You can't tour anymore. You're fucked. But still, comedians are like, yeah, but you know what? At least we're not going to get replaced by robots. It's like, oh, yes, you are. Yes, you are. It's like they're going to it's just a matter of time. I mean, this is, I talk about it too much on this podcast to the point where people get annoyed, but this is like, and I know, like, I read an interview with you. You mentioned celebrity conspiracies, like, you know, and I don't know exactly what you meant by that. Like, what, because there's a lot of different potential celebrity conspiracies, but the whole, like, my favorite of them all is the idea of celebrities being replaced by their clones.
Yeah.
Do you ever go that deep into it? So what do you think?
Yeah.
Okay, great. I'm sorry for not doing deeper research into that, but what do you think about that? Like, do you believe it the way I believe it, which is maybe, but probably not. Or what do you think?
I honestly think that as long as the celebrities are still getting the money, I think you're doing them a favor. Like, let these people live. You know what I mean? Let them have a regular life. Give them their privacy back and let the clones do the work. I feel bad for the clones because the clones are coming in just, you know, having no idea what regular humanity feels like. But in a way, that's probably better than what they're doing than having had a regular life and being thrown into celebrity. Because I don't think people ever think about how traumatic it must be to lose your right to anonymity. You know?
Right. Yeah.
That's gotta be why do we fucking crazy.
I mean, but you're experiencing that. You're out there. People know about you. You're, and if things, you know, after this special, you're gonna have to deal with that yourself. I mean,
I mean,
surely you experienced that.
I've been like recognized a couple times, but it's not like people are watching what I tweet or like watching what I do and being like, because right. The truth is I'm not successful enough to worry about it. Like there's a level of celebrity that you get to where people all of a sudden want to take away your life. Like there's like, right. I've watched it happen, you know, and it's all so fucking tribal the way that we like lift these people up and make them in gods, right? If you look at the way that we were, like, just I'm talking like eons back, right? We would take someone and we would make them a god. We would treat them like a god. We'd give them all the best clothes, the best food, the best housing, and then we would sacrifice them to God. And that is what we do to celebrities now, and it's so fucking weird, especially with the canceling. It's like the way it feels so fucking Catholic, like let's excommunicate them. It's just so fucking gross, and nobody banish seems them. To go, guys, this isn't progressive, this is
no
regressive.
Yeah And it's hackable is the other scary fucking thing. It's like bad enough that these mobs of who the fuck knows, whoever, are doing this. But then add to it those sinister pictures of like a bank of like 700 cell phones that all have their own individual Twitter accounts that are just randomly tweeting from different places to give the fucking illusion that there's something going on in that regard. And that anyone who can just put together 700 phones, not even that, 300 phones and just sick them on whoever you feel like sicking them on, or reversing it. You could like inflate someone with just 300 phones. 1,000, you're cooking with gas. So it's like the there's an illusion to it, because for some weird reason, people are just assuming that the people behind these accounts are even human beings when most of them aren't. They're just bots. And then some percentage of them are like, you know, who the fuck knows, like working for this company or that company. And so, I know what you mean. It's like a invasion of the body snatchers situation, you know, but what are you going to do? You made this great special. What are you going to do? I mean, do you have a plan? Like some, you know, I know you've seen it. I've seen it. Some of my friends, you know, all of a sudden they like explode into the stratosphere and like they get, they become so fucking famous, and then everyone's just attacking them out of the blue. But what's your plan? Right. What are you going to do if you put out a great
like
special?
Happens to me?
Yeah. What are you going to do when they come for you? That's the last question. Rosebud, what are you going to do when they come for you?
I've thought about that, dude. I've thought about that a lot. And I don't, for the amount of time that I've spent thinking about it, I really have come up with zero plan. Like, I don't have one. I think the best thing to do is not say anything. That's probably the best thing to do. Because the more, like, if you react to it, it ends up, like, inflaming it more. And I really love the way Michael Che deals with his haters. He's just, like, he, like, enjoys it. You know what I mean? Like, he really has a fun time. And I think a part of me really enjoys doing shit like that. But then I'll have a moment where I'm like, oh, fuck. I'm just like making things harder for myself, you know? And so I'll like take it down or I'll not respond. But I just, I think it's better to just not say anything. And that's probably the hardest thing for me to do. But that's what I'll do most likely is just.
Well.
Disappear for a second.
No one's gonna come for you. You're great. You're gonna be this special. I'm telling you, this is it's so nice to see a special, you know. And like the thing, like when I was the talent coordinator at the Comedy Store, you know, like, and I got to spend time with Mitzi, and this is the kind of special that she would have loved it so much. And it's not my place to speak for her, but like, she really like that was how, not just like, I mean, obviously the your act and your performance, but the way the whole production was so simple, but so somehow it was like super glamorous at the same time. It like brought me back to like, you know, those like great specials, the prior specials, you know what I mean? Like those great, simple yet awesome specials. So everybody, I really, really hope that you will watch Rosebud special. All the links for that are going to be at DuncanTrussell.com. Or Rosebud, can you tell people where they can find you?
Yeah, definitely. You can find me on Instagram at Rosebud Baker and Twitter at Rosebud Baker. My special is on, you can just go to standup.com/Rosebud Baker and you can watch it there. It's called Whiskey Fists. That is a title that you'll find out what is behind the title when you watch it, but Whiskey Fists. And I hope you guys will watch it. I hope you'll share it with people. I'm proud of it, and I it feels like the reception's been really good so far, so I'm just grateful that you had me on to talk about it. Honestly, I'm like, I am kind of dumbfounded now that it's out. I'm just like, okay, what next? Like, it's like, wow, that was 10 years of my life. You know,
you're free.
Let's see what happens now. Yeah,
it's whatever it is. Well, it's gonna be a lot of things and they're all gonna be great. Rosebud, I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
1 second. We did it. Hold on, I didn't die. Hold on. Okay, hold on. I'm going to press stop, and it's going to upload for a second. That was Rosebud Baker, everybody. All the links you need to get to Rosebud are going to be at DuncanTrussell.com. Definitely watch her special Whiskey Fists on YouTube. And much thanks to our beloved sponsors, Babbel, Squarespace, and Purple. Those offer codes, if you're interested, are at DuncanTrussell.com. Subscribe to my Patreon. Patreon.com/DTFH and stay safe and healthy and happy and full of love and joy out there, everybody. Thank you so much for supporting the DTFH. I will see you next week. Until then, Hare Krishna.